at the end of the pasture phase, when we're looking at going into crop next year, I won't even worry about chemical fallowing that. I just let that go to seed. It's not the seed bank that's causing the problem with our weeds. It's the condition of the soil that dictates which weeds come up. So just trying to stop them from seeding is not going to win the battle for you.
The Biological Farming Roundtable podcast helps farmers explore innovative, low-input, regenerative and profitable farming systems. The Biological Farming Roundtable is sponsored by Nutrisoil, an award-winning biological liquid fertiliser made from a big worm farm. Nutrisoil's purpose is to empower farmers to produce life-enriching food. My name is Nicola Maddock. I work at Nutrisoil. I envisage a future where farmers are rewarded for producing nutrient-rich foods and consumers have this easily available to them. Today's conversation is with ethical sheep and grain producer Cole Harper. Cole uses an exhaust fertiliser, worm liquid and animals in his system. He's been farming regeneratively for 10 years now, and in that time he's increased his carbon levels. Tissue tests, once unbalanced, are returning a complete balance, and grain is testing higher in nutrient content than other grains in the area. In agricultural economics, we talk about externalities. So what's the effect of a farming decision that Cole makes on those not involved in the transaction, so neighbours and the community? For example, nitrogen and phosphorus can pollute waterways and the atmosphere and lead to the need for pesticides and fungicides, which have been proven to impact human health. Cole uses no synthetic nitrogen or phosphorus, no fungicides or pesticides, and he doesn't even drench his sheep. It's a very natural but profitable system. The risks in this system are both low to Cole, the environment, and human health. This is my conversation with my good friend, Cole Harper.
Hi, Cole. Great to have you on the show today.
How are you, Nicola?
Yeah, very well.
That's good.
So, Cole, tell us a bit about your farm.
Yeah, so I farm at Area Park, which is 80 k's north of Wagga. We run a wheat and, well, mixed farm. So we grow canola, wheat and sheep, breeding a first cross lamb.
So you changed your system 10 years ago. You were conventional and then you went into a biological system. What was the reason for the change?
Well, I'd just gone out on my own, and it was the first year I had to buy fertiliser, and the agent rang me while I was on the beach and the price had jumped from $400 a tonne to $700 a tonne, and I said, no thanks, we won't have any of that. And that started the scramble to convert over to liquid, which I'd been thinking about for a while, and the versatility that that brought along with it. So that pushed me into the decision, and it's been a learning curve since then.
So basically, in the beginning, it was a monetary decision.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Has that changed over time, your reasons for farming the way you farm, or is it mainly just for money, a monetary decision?
No, it's been big changes. And I wanted to sort of get into some trace elements and things like that, improve the crop and improve the yield. But in looking at them, I've worked out that, you know, there's so much to do with soil health and plant health, which all leads into human health. And yeah, it's been an exciting trip.
So what did you change? You went from a liquid system. What liquids did you use and how did you apply them to your crop?
Well, it was a little bit biological, but it had tech-grade MAP in it as well, which in hindsight was a really good way of weaning yourself off conventional MAP and increasing the biology in the soil. So that was a good start there. And then once you get into it and you're sort of looking at different options and things like that, I went to a different product, a worm product, and in doing that I realised that the more biological the fertiliser was, the better nutrition the plant had, the better tissue tests were showing a better balance in their results. They were the excess minerals were coming down and the low minerals were coming up, and yet I wasn't necessarily adding them to the system, it was just the biology was making them available. And that'd be the real crux of the start of it, and then that makes you look into it more and more and see what you can find and work out from there.
With the worm liquid, you're actually putting in a biological mix of other things, weren't you?
Yeah, so we're buying a neat product. We're putting on 50 litres a hectare, so we're buying 20,000 litres of this product a year. Then right at the air seeder, as we put it into the air seeder, we'd be adding a fish emulsion to feed the biology and fire them up with molasses. It was cumbersome. It was a logistic nightmare and messy and fish emulsion smells, and it was hard for workers to understand what was needed. We used that for a few years. We caused a lot of problems. We were blocking up the liquid system, things like that. So there, in just looking around all the time, that's when we came across Nutrisoil then, and still a worm product, but higher concentrated, no blocking issues with it, and a lot less product to handle and deal with. So it was a lot simpler and easier, so we went that way.
So you changed from 50 litres per hectare to 5 litres per hectare?
Yes. Yep.
Liquid inject as well as a foliar application?
I've done very little foliar, really. Yeah, I've just been liquid inject, basically. I have foliared on new farms, sort of in desperation to try and perk it up a bit.
Do you coat your seed first, or it's just the liquid inject?
It certainly started off just liquid inject only, and yes, I have recently tried a bit of seed coating as well. Yep.
What do you coat it with?
With Nutrisoil.
Yeah, okay. Yep. You then changed into an exhaust system? Well, you added it.
Yeah, we added it. I was at a function and this bloke was talking about putting tractor exhaust into the ground and into the soil as a biological. And as soon as he said it was a biological stimulant, my ears pricked up. And so we looked into that. We actually came home to make our own unit. And at the time, the other unit, the opposition unit, was big, cumbersome thing. And a mate and I were able to make quite a neat and compact unit. And it turned out, so we just made it for ourselves, but it turned out so well that we've now taken them to the market and we have them for sale now. So.
Right, okay. So 5 litres per hectare of Nutrisoil in furrow, and then the exhaust machine.
And the exhaust as well, yep.
Yep. How does it actually work, converting the exhaust into nutrients for your soil and for your plants?
Yeah, well, you're not converting it. The nutrients are already there. The top six elements in the exhaust gas are the top six elements that our plants need. And that comes from the fact that diesel was oil, and oil was organic matter that's just been buried and basically composted. So really, your fuel, your diesel, you're just burning a compost. And we need to get away from the notion of toxic diesel fumes. They're toxic for humans, but they're not toxic for our plants and our soil.
And then I guess if your biological activity with your biostimulants and less chemicals, any concern with toxicity would have a fairly good biodegradable rate in it?
It would do, yes. Yep. There's only two toxic chemicals in the exhaust that came out when we sort of went through the biological farming system. We had, and the biological association looked at that. Oh, no, sorry, the organic association looked at that. And they were happy with organic farmers to use the exhaust in their system. So.
Right. What about your seed? Do you keep your seed for the following crop or do you buy it in?
Yeah, no, I certainly keep all my seed for the following crop. Really appreciate it's improving each year with better nutrition. You get better quality seed, better nutrients, and that gives the seedling that better kickstart, more complete start to life.
Yeah. What are you noticing in your actual soil and with your plants since you've changed from the biological into the biological system?
Yeah, the soil is certainly getting softer and spongier. The plants are healthier, less insects attack. I don't pick all my seed. And the livestock are eating the grass. They're healthier. Everything's just balanced and more nutritious.
What's your average break-even point in a crop? Seems pretty low input.
Yeah, it's very low input, so we're looking at sort of 3/4 of a tonne to the hectare to break even.
Is that inputs or everything?
That's inputs, machinery costs, that's harvesting, that's the works. Yep.
You've had two pretty dry years. How has this system managed in those dry years?
Yes, quite well. Well, it's adjusted to the season. It's a natural system. It's not grown on false pretenses. So it realises you need the moisture for the biology to work, which is releasing the nutrients for the plant. Therefore, you get less screenings, you get a better grain, a healthier grain, a heavier grain. It's got more nutrients in the grain. 2 years ago, we had a dry season, but we still harvested, and we didn't have any pinched grain at all. It was just a nice big fat grain. It just, the plant adjusted. It knew what it could produce with the moisture that it had. And then this year was even worse, 2018 was even worse. Because I hadn't put a lot of finances into the crop, I was quite happy to put the sheep on it and graze it and get a return for your money from the grazing. It's a lot easier decision to make if you haven't poured a lot of money into that crop.
Low risk.
Low risk, yep.
Yes. Tell us about your sheep. So the sheep market has been very good lately. Did that help you with that risk aversion?
Yeah, the sheep have got me through in the last few years for sure. Yes, the sheep prices have been excellent. Probably first of all, the healthy soil has created a healthy pasture. I don't drench my sheep. I don't vaccinate my lambs. I've increased lambing percentages, get a lot less losses. And the sheep are healthy and do well. So this year, when I was weaning the lambs, because it was so dry, I decided to sell my weather portion off straight away as stores. You know, they made good money. And then I was even able to sell the two oldest ages of my old breeding ewes. And they were fat enough and good enough condition to be saleable at a good price. And I just put that down to quality of feed that they've been eating. Yeah.
Are you needing to use any pesticides or fungicides at all?
No, I'd say I don't use any fungicide at all. I don't use any pesticide at all. Yeah, you know, I'm not pickling my grain. I'm not drenching my sheep. Not vaccinating. The work, the labour that takes out of the stock system is phenomenal.
You said you're not doing any preg testing?
Yeah, not even preg testing. It's not worthwhile. It's just the lambing percentages are so high. We just don't even do that. You're not knocking your sheep around. You're not spending a lot of time mustering and putting them through the yards, and you can just go on and do other things and improve the farm otherwise.
Yep. What's your rotation of your crops?
So we grow a canola crop first, so we probably come out of a 3-year pasture phase. And we grow canola, we put a bit of effort into preparing the canola crop, control the weeds there. I do use a pre-emergent Treflan on my canola. Then I've got the option of an in-crop spray in canola. Then that sets that paddock up for next year for a wheat crop, which I don't need to do much to at all. It's fairly minimal. I probably don't spray my wheat crop at all. If I do have a few weeds, if they're not going to choke the crop out and spoil the sample, I just see them as a good setup for sheep feed the next year. And there again, that's time, labour and expense saved from not using a chemical.
And then into a pasture phase.
And then into a pasture phase, and then that's just natural part, well, I'd call it natural, but it's based on hard-seeded clover, and the grasses and that are just all natural, so I'm not sowing a pasture. I do sprinkle a little bit of lucerne when I sow my wheat, and just sprinkle a bit of lucerne in. I'm not a great fan of lucerne. Lucerne is a great plant, but a pure lucerne stand is, I'm not interested in that. You've got to have the variety, and that's all there again, free of charge. Once you've got your clover and your grasses set up, they're just self-seeded.
When did you sow your clover, or did you ever?
I have sown a fair bit of clover lately, but that's mainly after the 10-year drought from 2000 onwards, which knocked our clover seed around. And well, at that stage, I'd been farming for close to 30 years, and that was the first time I've ever sown clover. So I'd grown up on hard-seeded clovers, and it was a bit tough to go and buy some clover seed and put out. But now I'm quite chuffed that I've got the whole farm sown to clover, and I'm really not planning on sowing clover ever again unless we buy a new block and need to establish it as well.
Yeah. So what comes up in your pasture phase?
That's determined by the season. Clover likes to come up in March or April. Once you get to May, you sort of don't get a lot of clover come up. So it's seasonally derived, but it's clover, it's ryegrass and barley grass. And then there's just a great variety of other broadleafs, and we'll just call them minor grass species. That
ground cover,
diversity.
Do you do any herbicide sprays in your pasture phase?
No, I don't. At the end of the pasture phase, when we're looking at going into crop next year, I won't even worry about chemical fallowing that. I just let that go to seed. It's not the seed bank that's causing the problem with our weeds. It's the condition of the soil that dictates which weeds come up. So just trying to stop them from seeding is not going to win the battle for you.
I mean, you're not getting those nitrate weeds come up. You know, your heliotrope monopoly, your melon monopoly, all those types of things.
Yeah, well, they're summer weeds. So, yes, I do get melons. I actually don't mind melons. Melons are actually a sign of a well-balanced soil.
Very high mycorrhizal fungi, and they keep the soil very cool in summer.
Do they? Yes, yep. Farmers hate them because of their nightmare with a tined implement. But if you've got a disc implement and not afraid to use the disc implement. That's a great pleasure, ploughing in paddock full of melons, I tell you.
So you don't have many crop phases before you go into quite a good bulk of a pasture phase. Each time you come out of those two crop seasons and go into your pasture phase, do you get a high amount of melons and heliotrope, or is it just a diversity that comes up, or do they just transition out? How does it all work?
Your melons and your heliotrope, your hairy panic, black grass, like they're all summer grasses, so they're all very dry in the summer. Mm. So they're very dictated by summer rainfall, when it rains, and the soil condition that they have. So, yeah, it's just so variable. And I'm probably am getting more melons at the stage, and I'm quite happy to see the melons there because I know the crop, the soil is in good condition. There's a good variety of minerals available. On that point, one thing I've noticed recently, we've been feeding out canola hay. I really like my canola hay. I really like canola as a grazing crop, as a feed, because it's high in minerals. And where we've fed out the canola hay, I always feed my hay out on the barest, worst patch of ground I can find in the paddock, usually along a tree line or something like that. And there's usually a bit of hay left. And I've noticed in the last year and the year before, that's where the melons grow. And there's no melon seeds in that hay, but it's put the minerals into the soil, made the minerals available, and thus the melons come up. And they'll be coming up there and not in the rest of the paddock.
What about sheep health? Do you have any problems with them grazing these if there's weeds there, ground cover?
Yeah, the sheep health has improved out of sight. It's really good. Yeah, I'm learning some interesting things. Our probably battle through the summer is hairy panic and the problems that that can cause, especially with lambs. So we've got to balance that. The older the sheep, the more hairy panic they can handle. They can handle it. They seem to be able to digest it or break down the toxins in it. And just the diverse pastures and high nutrient. So my crops are testing, my tissue test on a crop is coming back a perfect balance. So if my crops are testing like that, my pasture is going to be like that as well. And it's highly nutritious. And then the sheep are going to do well because it's all based on minerals and the nutrition that they're getting.
Do you put out mineral licks?
Yes, I've been down the Pat Colby path of free choice minerals. I really like that. It is hard work and time consuming and needs a commitment to continue it. And we're working on some new trolls now so we can utilise that. I think that's really good. An easier way to achieve the same thing is the Himalayan rock salt. We've been using that. I've seen some great things there. The sheep are calmer. I was hand feeding grain and they just stand back and wait their turn. They wouldn't rush in and knock you over. They wouldn't, and they actually leave a little bit of grain, so they're eating less. They weren't ravenous, obviously more satisfied. And I think that's just the minerals in the body just making, they've got the minerals, so they're not looking for something all the time.
So they were actually utilising quite a lot of these rock salts. Did you see them licking them all up?
Oh, yeah, yes. Yep,
love
yep.
them.
Yeah, they love them. Yep.
What about back to the free choice minerals? Was there a mineral that they were particularly taking?
Yeah, there would have been. I couldn't remember what they were really on then, but it was very interesting to watch them. There again, the sheep were nice and calm and quiet, and you could go down and fill the troughs up and just stand back and watch them. I remember one old ewe, she came flying down to get whatever she was after, and my troughs are, I've got different minerals on different sides of the trough, and she flew in, put her head in on one side, and that's not what I want. She flew around the other side and stuck her head in there, and that's what I want.
That's where she stayed. It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. So you said the lambs have problems with hairy panic. What do you do to manage that?
Not much, really. If I had more feed, like this year I'm very limited in my options of where I can put the lambs. If you had more feed, you'd put them on a paddock that didn't have hairy panic or as much hairy panic. In years of low feed, I just cop it on the chin. You lose half a dozen or 10. And hairy panic, if it doesn't kill them, they do really well on it. So lose a couple and the rest do really well.
You've got a stubble crunching business. Tell us about that.
Right, so the stubble crunch is a machine I designed to smash up your canola stubble and your cereal stubbles, and it's been used in many different ways since then. It's basically a roller made out of grater blades, mounted on a harrow bar that you run over your paddock, and then it'll jam the product, the stubble, between the blade and the ground. And depending on what it is, it'll do different things. Like canola, it'll just cut it up into 6-inch lengths, which allows it to flow through your air seeder bar. wheat stubble will knock it down, split it open, and that's letting the biology in to break it down, and it creates a weak spot, and then it'll fold, and you'll find your air seeder bark and handle a lot more trash. So that's been really good. I've got 15 of those, and I hire them out all over New South Wales, from Moree right down into Victoria, Shepparton, and down to Ararat and things like that. So,
do you transport them down, or do people come and get them?
I basically leave them spread out over that area, and there's usually one not too far away if someone wants it. The basic rule is you go and pick it up, do what you want to do, keep it, and I'll arrange for someone else to pick it up from you. But yes, there is times that it's obviously just too far away, and I do step in then and transport them around from time to time.
Yeah. So people can rent the stubble cruncher, but they can give you a call and talk to you about the exhaust too, because you sell those.
Yes, we do sell those, and I just find the system really great, because whenever we're tilling the soil, we're told not to till the soil, or whenever we put a tine in it, we're knocking the biology around. But if we can feed them the biology and stimulate them at the same time, we might be going back one step, but we're going forward two at the same time. So, and then once you pay for it, you've got years of benefit. And it's whenever you're building your biology, you're building your soil, you're building plant health and human health. And merely, if you're not even putting the carbon out into the atmosphere, you put it into the soil, you're helping the atmosphere as well.
Yeah. So if you could look back over these past 10 years of transitioning, is there something that you wish you'd done earlier or that you would change?
I suppose you'd probably look back and you'd probably just think, well, every step you did, you think, well, why didn't I do that 5 years before I did it? I think that's basically it. And you don't know what the next step's going to be until you take the one before. As you learn and your eyes are open to different things, it just leads to the next step, and I think it might be a never-ending journey, really.
You've got two sons who are considering coming on the farm. I know, because you've been buying more farms for them. Do they think the same as you with their farming methods? Are they interested in human health and how the farming that they do can affect human health and the environment? Have they got that awareness?
Yes, Max in particular, he did agriculture at school, so he would have been being taught the conventional way, and that he just seems to have a natural understanding. And I was a little bit concerned that he'd think his father's a bit of a mad hatter and want to go for, you know, more urea, more fertiliser and grow a bigger crop than the neighbour. But it just seemed a natural instinct to him to really appreciate soil health and plant health. And he loves nothing more than getting down on his hands and knees and having a big whiff of the nice fresh soil. And yeah, it just seems to be a natural instinct there. So I think in a way that encourages me to keep going. That must be how we should be farming.
Yeah. Isn't that nice? And where do you get your support to keep going? Because it is different to what other people do. Your crops might not look like they're harvesting as much as others, but your inputs are so low and your sheep are able to balance that out. Your phases of being able to have that pasture phase for that long, it's very good for your soil.
Mm.
How do you get support when others around you are so different?
Yeah, it's tough. You've got to be strong. You've got to be strong-willed. You've got to be probably a bit of a loner as well. But companies like yourself, the Nutrisoil, and, you know, I've just been to the Nutrisoil annual event, and you see the crowd that rolls up there. You listen to the scientists talk, and sometimes they're teaching you new things, but sometimes they're just reconfirming what you have come up with, you even yourself. But you see the results on your own farm. Like, I've got outsiders looking at me, and they're saying, oh, your crop's not good enough. You know, it's not up to scratch, you better use a bit of fertiliser. But what they don't see is the health of that plant, the healthier soil, the fact that I'm not using much in the way of chemicals and no fertilisers, no synthetic fertilisers. If you look close enough, the advantage is there, and I'm confident that when we get into some good seasons, you know, we're just going to run away with it, really, just produce some good quality products and quantity as well, and see that coming.
Absolutely. And let's just hope that in the future that there's a premium price for people that farm like you, Cole.
Yeah, that's one thing we need to work on, is a measurement system that'll measure grain properly. Like, I've taken my own grain and a neighbour's grain, and I've done a tissue test on the actual grain, and my trace element minerals, my nutrients in that grain are way above the neighbour's, and yet at the moment we've just got to stick it all in the same bulk handling system. You know, you see the odd organic produced pork or beef or things like that, but we really do need to build a market that is One, the nutrients are measured correctly at the moment. Like even our protein measurement on wheat is just a joke, really. It's not measuring true protein. And I think we should be able to create biologically grown produce, a bit like the organic system, but biological produce, which I think can be certainly as good, if not better, necessarily than a organic system production.
No pesticide residues. You know, yep. You use such low levels of chemical and you have such a biologically active soil, you're not going to have any chemical residues in your grain and your sheep as well. You're not spraying herbicides over that 3-year period.
Yep.
That's got to be good quality meat.
Mm-hmm.
Great talking with you, Cole.
Very good. Thanks, Nicola.
Please follow the Biological Farming Roundtable podcast. Share it with your friends and networks. I'm Nicola Maddick and I work at Nutrisoil, a liquid biological fertiliser made from a big worm farm whose purpose is to empower farmers to produce life-enriching food.